everything you need to know about elections 2024 on Cape Talk. Join the conversation.
And we welcome Ivo Vechta via Zoom. It's good to have you with us, Ivo.
Good morning, Clarence, and thank you for inviting me onto the show.
Yeah, it's a conversation that I think is absolutely necessary. Either we must dispel this rumor, or we must say there is some real essence there. Where do you think this Swat Gevaar thing comes from?
It's actually quite strange because over the years, there's been a lot of criticism of the DA for certain statements that they've made and so on that have been interpreted as being racist. And very often, in fact, in all cases that I can think of, that hasn't really been true. So it's sort of become this image that the DA, because it opposes the ANC, is somehow equivalent to what the NP was back in the old South Africa. You know, it was the opposition to the ANC. But the DA has got a completely different history. It once in 2003 tried to merge with what was left of the National Party, but that failed. The National Party ended up merging with the ANC. So the DA's history, if you go back through history, it goes all the way down to the progressive parties of the 60s and the 50s, 60s and 70s. They were reliably against apartheid. They were sometimes the only voice in parliament against apartheid. They've always been anti-apartheid. They've always been non-racial. You know, I don't know where this image comes from, that the DA is somehow a racist party. I'm sure some of its voters might be. I don't know how many of its voters would be. I think it'd be a minority. But, you know, the party itself, I don't think is racist. And I don't think it's reasonable or fair to constantly interpret its statements as being racist. And I think that has really negative effects on the way people vote, and the image that that party has, and its ability to save us from what's really a disaster of the ANC's making now.
Yeah, I think it's desperation on the part of some particular parties to try and attach this label instead of necessarily arguing, the merits of policy kind of positions. However, you are talking to a person that for some reason or the other, I can't shed it. For some reason or the other, it still stays in me. It is difficult for me to see this particular party in the way that you describe it. And I'm pretty desperate to reconcile, some craziness in my thoughts. So you are talking to me when we're having this particular conversation. I want you to help me through this. Okay, so the DP became the DA. How did the Democratic Party become the Democratic Alliance?
It goes all the way back to the Progressive Party of the late 50s, I think. No, 59, I think it was, which then became the Progressive Reform Party. It became the PFP. And you know, if I don't think you're old enough, but the older listeners will remember Helen Suzman being the lone voice.
I am old enough. I'm 57 years old. I am old enough, so I've got a sense of that history.
You'll know about Helen Suzman then, who was the Absolutely. Lone voice in the old South Africa in Parliament against apartheid and against the oppression and the racism, the racial segregation.
I understand
of the National Party.
I'm talking DP to DA. That involved the National Party.
Yes, it did, but very briefly. It involved two parties. There was the Federal Alliance, which was Louis Leitch's party, and the New National Party, which by that time was pretty much on its last legs. They tried to merge with it, but that merger never stuck. So neither of those two parties ended up merging with the DA in the long term. The NNP went and merged with the ANC after that, and the... This is how Kortbroek van Schalkwyk, for example, became a minister. The Federal Alliance ended up merging with the Freedom Front Plus. So neither of them stuck with the DA. So, you know, the DA, I'm sure there are many NP voters that now vote DA, former NP voters that now vote DA. But the DA itself, you know, is not the party of apartheid. It never has been.
So I want to dispel from my mind all of the, and I don't have reasons. I cannot, for the life of me, understand why I'm so scared that it could represent something from the past. Still, you say there's absolutely nothing in its history for me to base my feelings on. Okay.
I think the reason is, and I feel it myself sometimes, you know, and it's, I think the media has a lot to do with it, because I'm not surprised that the ANC would call it the Party of Apartheid, you know, that they would use the white gevaar, if you like, as an electioneering tactic. When Tsongeza Zibi, when Razem Zanzi gets attacked by John Steenhuisen, I'm not surprised that he uses the word swart gevaar, because that's, he's a politician, you know, he does it. What surprises me is that the media just goes along with that and doesn't really critically analyze these claims, you know, that the statements are by Helen Ziller, for example, on colonialism, that those statements were inherently racist.
Yeah.
I think they weren't.
My perspective is a so-called colored social history. So my perspective is that a lot of people that became part of the Democratic Alliance as part of the tricameral system, which we kind of resisted back in the day as well. So this liberal entity became a broad church. Could it be in that kind of reasoning where you worry about that legacy, that history?
Yeah, but you need to then look at what the actual policies of the party are. You know, if you read the policy documents that they came out with this massive policy conference after the 2019 elections, in which they lost a lot of support. And they had this policy conference, and they came out with this great policy document that sort of reestablished itself as a classical liberal party that supported non-racialism, which it had always done.
But it's a broad church now. It's not a liberal party per se.
Its policies are absolutely liberal. You know, its policies are absolutely classical liberal policies. You know,
but there's diverse voices, including conservative voices within it.
There are some, yes, and there are some what I would call social liberals or left liberals,
which is no different to the ANC
within the party as well.
I hear you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those under Musim Amani, you saw a lot of that, because the party was a bit unmoored then, and it was trying to present itself almost as ANC light, you know, that it was going to do what the ANC does, except it was going to do it better and without corruption.
Unmoored, but let's go to Musim Maimane. He still, under his leadership, generated some gains in terms of support. Did he not?
No, he didn't actually. Support dropped for the first time in the 2019 elections. Under his leadership. And I think a lot of that was to do with the fact that he differed with the DA on the ideas around black empowerment and so on whether or not race was a good proxy for disadvantage, or was still a good proxy for disadvantage. Obviously, in the past it was. But the question is, now that we have a substantial black middle class and a very wealthy black elite, could you still say that, you know, merely being black is a proxy for disadvantage? And the DA was saying, no, it isn't. That policy, by the way, was written, that non-racial policy was written by a black woman, Gwen Ngwenya. You know, so this is not a white invention, this non-racialism. And in fact, that same non-racialism was something that the Institute for Race Relations has been supporting since 1929, that the Southern Communist Party was adopted back in the 50s, and the same with the ANC. They all, and the Constitution, they all claim this non-racial future for South Africa.
Okay. So
there was a difference of ideology between some of the black leaders in the DA, notably Musim Amani, and the DA over the future of black empowerment. You know, having looked at the what black empowerment was doing, and what cadre deployment was doing to the country, and asking whether there wasn't a better non-racial way of dealing with disadvantage and dealing with redress. You know, a lot of journalists were saying that the DA is denying race and denying the historic disadvantage of black people. But it's not. It explicitly says that in its policies. It says that this is a great tragedy, and this is something for which redress is absolutely required. So, There's a lot that is simply dishonest about the DA in the media, dishonest criticisms, and that I wonder why the media is doing? I mean, is it just for clicks? Is it just to stir controversy? Because it's not helping the country.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I think it's probably just for us to get a bit of a bearing. It's Mark with a question. Mark wants to know who my guest represents. So are you representing your conscience, your assessment as a journalist, or are you a DA supporter?
No, I've actually been very critical of the DA in the past, and on a number of occasions I've not voted DA. For various reasons over the years. So no, I'm not, I'm certainly not a reliable DA supporter. Although I will probably vote DA in this coming election, and because I believe that they're the only reasonable alternative to the ANC. And I think getting the ANC out of power should be the primary objective, of these elections. But no, I'm not a DA supporter. I'm not a DA member. I'm an independent journalist, although I write columns for the Daily Friend, which is a liberal journal published by the Institute of Race Relations. So I get paid by the Institute of Race Relations. And in that sense, I sort of semi-represent them and their classical liberal views.
Okay. Now, again, and I'm feeling able to chat with you because of that history as a journalist. So I'm asking questions as they come up in my mind, because it's the battle that I've had for a long while now, and I've not quite dispelled this kind of preoccupation that I have with a history that, again, I'm not able to reconcile by myself, and maybe you can assist with that. Again, people would point in the direction of the voices within the DA, the black voices, the dissenting black voices in the DA, and the treatment that they received from leadership. Is there anything there that we should be aware of? And Musi Maimane being one of them.
As I said, I think the differences were ideological. In the case of Musi Maimane, he was responsible for a loss in support in the DA, which, you know, if you're a political party, you obviously don't want that to happen. And if you believe that a leader was responsible for that, oversaw that, then maybe it's time to change leaders. I don't think that is controversial in itself.
Yeah, but we're talking about other members high-profile members that were, you know, fired or at least pushed aside.
I don't think they were fired. Some of them left. The only one that I can think of that was pushed out was Galip Kachalia. Over his remarkably pro-Hamas comments on the Gaza-Israeli war.
Was it pro-Hamas or was it pro-peace?
Well, it was it was pretty anti-Israel. The DA wasn't happy with those statements. They didn't want to take sides, and they felt that Kachalia had done so, and that he refused to apologize for that.
And then
Kachalia resigned. So again, he wasn't pushed out, but you know, he resigned.
I think the DA's position on Gaza maybe also causes some dis-ease. Is there a possibility of a third position in relation to the conflict?
That's difficult. I think no matter what, if you take sides in that conflict, you're going to alienate some people.
Can you take a pro-peace side and not?
Well, yeah, but the pro-peace side is kind of it's a bit naive. I mean, it's, you know, sure, we all wish for peace. You know, I mean, you remember the Cold War. We all wished for peace, and we sang songs for peace, and you know, we had rock concerts for peace, and so on.
But they shook on a two-state solution as a means for lasting peace.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I think the DA is behind a two-state solution. I think that's exactly what they support, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And the DA had a pretty strong stance on the Ukraine, and specifically Vladimir Putin. And I agreed with that stance, because sovereignty is and should be sacrosanct. But then, to a certain degree, that very same principle must apply in the Middle East as well.
Yeah. Look, it's very complicated in the Middle East, and I really don't want to get bogged down into that particular history.
No, but the DA has made comments about it, and we need to understand why this cloud persists And I think a lot of people are there at this moment in time in terms of Gaza and positions on it.
I don't think this is really what certainly not what I was writing about in terms of accusations of racism against the DA. It had nothing to do with the Gaza war. It had more to do with things like, when Zilla said that the DA has to deal in the Western Cape.
But I'm talking, I think in terms of principle, on principle, the DA correctly said that Vladimir Putin must be arrested, yes, on the basis of an ICC warrant for his arrest. Now, if the very same warrant is issued to Benjamin Netanyahu, should that principle still be in place?
I think the DA would have to be consistent on that. Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what they will do. I don't know whether they will, condemn the warrant, but say that, look, it is after all issued by the ICC, and therefore it should be dealt with in the same way as the Putin warrant. I don't know. I don't speak for the DA. So the DA will have to formulate a position on that when that happens.
But the principle is important. Now, let's talk about the colonial argument, the Alan Zilla colonial argument, which also, I think, is also up there, top of mind kind of thing in the assessment of our conversation and your article. Your article was that the DA has this cloud hanging over it, that it represents Swart Gevaar. And I said the objective of this conversation was to banish it forever from our heads, if there are grounds, and you're assisting us with that pursuit. Talk to us about Helen Zilla's colonial argument.
Yeah, that was an early case. It happened, it was 12 years ago now, actually. I was surprised how long ago that was. That happened in 2012. And, she said, she essentially said that, look, colonialism has left a legacy of institutions, infrastructure, and industries on which we can build a new society, and that we shouldn't reject these positive consequences of colonialism. The roads they built, and the industries they built, and the infrastructure, and the courts, and so on. That was widely interpreted as being a defense of colonialism, which I don't think it ever was, and I don't think Zilla, knowing Zilla's history, would ever have unequivocally defended colonialism. It was, she just meant that given post-colonial conditions, rejecting these things, instead of building upon them might not be the wisest course of action. It's ironic that several post-colonial leaders, Mandela among them, and anti-colonial thinkers like Chinua Achebe, also said the same sort of thing. They also said, look, the colonialism has built infrastructure, has built things in a country that the country needs to use instead of reject and neglect. I don't think that there was anything particularly racist about that. She didn't say that colonialism was desirable, or that the oppression and dispossession were a just price to pay for these legacies, or that the negative effects do not outweigh the positive effects. She didn't say that she would have chosen colonialism in advance if she would have known the outcome. But those statements were twisted. Now, of course, the DA is not entirely innocent in these affairs. Frankly, they were politically naive. They should have picked up that this was going to be controversial and that this would be twisted. It should have been perfectly predictable and foreseeable that this was going to be used against them by their enemies and perhaps by the media. But it doesn't prove that they're racist. It really doesn't. And that's what, to my mind, is it's so unfortunate that the media just goes along with this narrative. It's like the article that I criticized that said, the DA is invoking Swart Gevaar, and white people like that.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, but it's not just the media. I'm talking to you. I'm telling you where my feelings are at, and I think maybe a whole lot of people are thinking in the manner that I do, and we need to reconcile it. 30 years of water under the bridge, we need to reconcile it, understand if it is of any value to the equation these days. So it's this kind of frank and honest conversation that I think is absolutely necessary, and I'm wondering if we can continue the conversation for a short while after the news headlines. We have quite a lot of comments in about it. I'd like to play one or two back and see where your mind line. Is that Ivo? Is that possible at all?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll come back to the conversation in a short while, chatting with Ivo Vector. We're talking about this cloud that hangs over the DA. Is it justified or not? Okay, welcome back. Loads of messages in. Ivo Vector, our guest, of course, and Ivo's written an article in the Daily Friend. You want to go and read it. And he argues that maybe this cloud hanging over the DA is not a fair cloud. And that's what I'm interrogating at this moment in time. And it's kind of personal for me, very personal for me, because there's something there, and it has historically stopped me from embracing the DA unequivocally, or any political party for that reason. But in the DA's case, there's something there, and I can't reconcile it. So somebody writes, Clarence, people like yourself and Edel only hear what you want to hear. Look at it. Look at who's killing who. That's what I look for. You need to get over the past and live in the present, because if you don't, you'll stay a bag of salt. Trevor, that's the challenge. That is absolutely the challenge, Trevor. And I'm doing that. I'm being honest about my misconceptions about stuff. I wanna find out what is relevant now, and the kind of stuff that I shouldn't take into the future. And I wanna put it to you, Trevor, that is your challenge too. That is all of our challenges. Ivo, welcome back. There's a lot of voice notes in, so I think we're gonna go through it, and if you feel a response, then please wade in. Let's take a listen, Joe.
Hi, Clarence. Let me say up front, I'm a DA supporter, and only because of, it's probably better the devil you know. I grew up in apartheid. Things were much better, and even my siblings want to kill me when I say that, but it is the truth. In any case, when Steenhuisen speaks, the racism or Afrikanism comes through, and I might just have something against it, because I live in a complex, and when the guy that does our accounts and things, and what the management actually, when he chairs a meeting, the Afrikaner's voice comes through, and that smug. And if I have any advice for the DA, is just lose that. And I have nothing against Afrikaans. I actually love the language. I speak the language, and I'm sad that my grandkids don't want to speak it, or my kids for that matter. But yeah, that is all I have to say to the DA.
And I think that's
my two cents worth.
Thank you. There's a lot of honesty there. There's one thing I don't agree with, and that is that things were necessarily better during apartheid. I wouldn't have had this job if it wasn't for 1994. So I do think personally that that was good for me, and certainly for my generation. Ivo, you want to respond?
Absolutely. I always write about that, and I say, look, no, things weren't better under apartheid, and frankly, they weren't even better for white people. You know, the economy was. I actually looked it up the other day for another column I wrote. GDP per capita declined for 10 out of the last 14 years of the apartheid regime. You know, it wasn't a great system. It wasn't better than it is now. Absolutely, we should welcome the democratic revolution. And we can regret what the ANC has done in the last 15 years or so. You know, without rejecting that, the fact that a democratic dispensation is absolutely the moral right and is absolutely better than what we had before. Just one comment. Steenhuisen is not Afrikaans. He speaks Afrikaans very badly. He's an English liberal.
Yeah, I think she used the word smug.
Yes.
It's more an attitude.
I don't think he's the most charismatic leader, frankly. I would agree with her there. You know, he's not the best leader that I could imagine. So I see what she's saying there. I see what she sees in it. But you know, you've got to, with all of this, you've got to take into account, what are the practical consequences of voting one way or another? You know?
Yeah, it's a tactical vote.
It's a tactical vote. If if there's, you know, this we've got stats, the Institute for Race Relations done some surveys and so on. It says that, look, 89% of white South Africans agree that South Africans of different races need one another for progress and that there should be full opportunity for people of all skin colors. So, that leaves 11%, you know, and some of them probably vote for the PA.
The mathematicians have guided us on a tactical vote, and I think their arguments are pretty compelling. Let's take another voice note, Joe.
Hi, this is Mary Jean. I'm just commenting that when there was a vote on the ceasefire, 72 members of the DA actually voted against the ceasefire. And I've sent you a document showing listing those who voted against the ceasefire and the breaking off of
I think Ivo, let's end there, but let's end because it is current. It is top of mind, and a big constituency in Cape Town specifically, of course, are pro-Palestinian, maybe even not pro-peace. So was it a bad maybe strategy call in terms of not being unequivocal or being maybe a little more equivocal in terms of their position?
Yeah, I think they I don't know if they actually did the maths on it. You know, the Muslim population in South Africa, I mean, I don't know how to quantify the amount of Palestinian support in South Africa. The Muslim population is only about 1 or 2%. I don't know whether they did the maths and whether they took a position based on polling. Funny enough, the DA used to do that and got criticized over that.
But you don't take a position
5 and 10 years ago.
This is the problem with politics.
You take a position on principle. Yeah. And I think the DA have been fairly good recently at taking positions on principle. And they probably feel that Israel had an absolute right to defend itself against the 7 October attack.
Well, let's see if that principle is extended to the nth, because ultimately that is what we want from politics and what we're not getting. And there's been so much hypocrisy in the world on this particular issue. Ivo, we really appreciate this interaction. Thank you very much. I don't know to what extent, if at all, any vestiges of history still contaminate the DA, but your insights are important, and we appreciate it. Thank you.